Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and welcome to Love Letters Live, where every week we bring you some wonderful guest with a personal story and a love letter. And Teresa and I, and maybe many of you who are listening, know that every experience you have has the potential for a love letter to somebody. Somebody's touched your life, somebody's made your road easier, somebody's made your life hell, but you've learned something from it. Even that's worth a letter of appreciation for your sake, as well as maybe the other person. Maybe it wasn't intentional that somebody stood in your way. Whatever you've been through, a love letter is such a wonderful way to solve it, to make it feel better, to ameliorate it somehow, and to bathe in your own memories and remember the lessons that you've learned, and to make somebody else's life happy. So we say write it and stamp it and mail it. And this week, we have a guest come back to us, we're happy to say, Rita Abrams, who some of you may remember, depends how old you are and where you live, but this was an international hit, and it was a song called Mill Valley, My Hometown.
It's called Mill Valley.
Oh, just Mill Valley. Yeah. I guess the refrain is Mill Valley, My Hometown.
That's
I remember when it first came.
That's My Home, yes. By the Children.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I remember when it first hit the radio, and it was just astoundingly uplifting to have children singing a song about their town, and that it was right in my neighborhood, that I knew where this town was. And not too long ago, there was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle about Rita as the woman who wrote this song, and how many years ago?
40 years ago.
Tell us just a little bit about that,
yeah.
So if people didn't hear the last show. Although they can now on our website, but just catch us up a little.
Yeah, well, I was a teacher, a fairly new teacher in Mill Valley, kindergarten teacher, and I had always been musical and written songs, but I had really settled on a teaching career and was very happy with it, and had found Mill Valley completely by accident when I was out here looking for a teaching job, and just picked the name off a map and went in for an interview. And when I drove into the town, then I realized what a special place it was. And so this was the second year I was teaching. On Christmas Day of 1969, I was walking through Mill Valley, through what is now the plaza. And it was a balmy day, not like my Cleveland Christmases where I grew up. And it was a beautiful day, and I decided that that the town needed to have a song about it, and that I would write the song, but I'd write it simply enough for my kindergartners to sing the chorus, which was just Mill Valley, that's my home. And so I did. I just sat down on the bench right next to the bus depot. Now it's the book depot. And I always say the song wrote itself, because it was the simplest song I ever wrote. I finished it that night, but and then I had met a producer who was a big-time record producer, and he had produced The Love and Spoonful, and, you know, Do You Believe in Magic, and Norman Greenbaum's Spirit in the Sky, Eric Jacobson. And I kept running into him. It was very serendipitous the way the whole thing happened. And then finally I ran into him after I had, he said, make a tape of the song, send it to me. And I asked him if he would listen in person, because I ran into him and I had this tape. And he said, I never listen in person, but I was very uncharacteristically aggressive with him. And I got him to come over to my apartment and just sit there and listen to the song. And he said, let's do it. So,
and it was a national hit.
It was an international hit. Yeah, it was really a miracle.
It really spoke to something so basic and such a need. And as far as we're concerned in the world of love letters, you got letters from people, from soldiers.
Right.
I mean, I'm still so touched by this, and I hope our listeners will go on our website, loveletterslive.com, and go to our radio show and type in Rita, and that show will pop up, and you can listen to the MP3, because to hear these letters from soldiers and people who were far away from home, the sound of children's voices talking about home did something exceptional to the hearts and souls. And as Rita was leaving last time, she happened to mention, tell us what you talked about.
Well, I think it was that I mentioned that one of the things that I do, I have a tradition that I started myself many years ago, which was to write, I think I started it as a birthday letter, and every birthday I would write a letter to myself and then seal it, and then on the next birthday open it and read it.
So you so you didn't actually mail it, but you put it aside.
Right. Right.
And you waited a whole year. How smart. Because we talk a lot about writing love letters to yourself, and we've had some wonderful guests and experiences who have written. One woman wrote a love letter to her body to thank it for getting better after a dreadful, dreadful time with cancer and chemotherapy. And one woman wrote to her future self. You can go to our radio show and type in Martha or Judy and hear these. And love letters to oneself is a real art form.
Well, it's also very exciting to go back, and I mean, it's always a big thrill for me to take that time and then and read the letter that I had written the year before
to see how you've changed or where you were a year ago or what.
What I do is in the letter, and by the way, I enjoyed it so much that I decided to do a New Year's letter as well.
So and you I've do gotten, two a year now.
So I do two, and it just happens one. My birthday's in August, so it's kind of like a half year, and. And I've gotten friends to start doing it, and my daughter, who's now 29.
Good for you.
She keeps one of them. I think it's the birthday letter that she does, and it's everything. It's first of all, it always starts with gratitude, what's wonderful is that I find that there always is an overflow of gratitude.
Yes.
When I really stop and take stock of my life, there's always a lot to be grateful for. And
do you specify it?
Yes.
Uh-huh, good.
Yeah, all the things that I'm feeling grateful for. And then it's what the year has been like and what progress I've made in my life. And then I have career goals. And the funny thing is, I had very strict parameters for myself when I first started doing this years ago. Like, you have to write it on the day, and then you have to seal it the next day. And now it's stretched out for weeks and months. And in fact, I haven't even finished my, I haven't even sealed my birthday letter, and it's almost time for the New Year's letter. And the funny thing is, you feel like you're kind of breaking some kind of rule, and then you think, well, wait a minute, these are my rules.
Okay,
this is my letter.
Yeah,
I could do whatever
I want. What I always say is the beauty of writing a love letter is you're the boss.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, it's really hard in this very structured world of ours to believe that we are the boss in any situation.
Right. This is one of them.
Yeah, I remember when I first used to write diaries when I was a kid, I wouldn't, if I didn't keep it every night, I would apologize to the diary for not having written in it. I'm so sorry. Dear diary, I'm so sorry. And it's so comical to think about.
Yes, but look what an interesting little part of yourself you get, part of your personality you get to look at.
Yeah.
That taking something very
seriously.
I'm curious about your childhood diaries. Do you still have them?
I do. I have all of them.
And
yeah.
Have you read them recently?
And that's another, not recently, but that's another very funny thing, because the way they structured, some of my diaries were whole page, but some of them, my first diaries were like five lines, and then they'd have five.
A 5-year diary.
They'd
right?
have 5 days on, you know, on one page. And it was so hard to fit it all into those five little lines. And so it was very interesting to look and see that that I was, you know, if how hard I was trying to keep all my thoughts within those five lines.
Well, like a musical staff, isn't that interesting?
Well, that's true.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't thought about that.
In your soul.
Yeah, yeah.
Do what you can on five lines.
So you had to say just the important things.
Right, right.
But that's, I'm interested in the, you used to seal it the next day and now you're taking a long time.
Yeah.
When we do love letter workshops, It's so interesting. There are definitely different ways of going about this, but we tend to say take time because you don't think of everything.
That's right.
You know, part of writing a really great love letter is to put everything you think down and then see what you want to include.
That's true.
So that makes sense either way.
Yeah, and it's true because there is an unfolding. Like what may be true on New Year's Day or the day of my birthday, it may be a situation that has yet to unfold, and then a different part of it will
emerge. On the other hand, isn't that what your next letter might be including also?
That's true. That's true.
Because you don't want to lose that rhythm of having it
right
to open later.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
So what kinds of things about yourself have you learned, if you can tell us, like emotional truths about yourself or important things about yourself from one letter to another?
Well, first of all, I've learned that I'm a very positive person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that does emerge from the letters. and that whatever experience I have, I do take it philosophically, and I owe, and I've been helped along that path by a spiritual community that I belong to as well, which is Science of Mind is the original name. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's now they call it the Golden Gate Centers for Spiritual Living. But years ago, when I was really frightened about a situation in my life, and I was feeling kind of isolated, and I another kind of kismetic experience where I started going to these services, and they're very totally non-sectarian, and people from all different philosophies and all different denominations go, but it's basically a very, very positive philosophy of life, and that anything that happens to you can be, you can use it positively.
Oh, well, that's what we're saying, and that yes,
exactly.
So many ways of seeing that truth,
and so that really has colored and supported that part of myself. And
do you find that you have repeated the same mistakes that you
wish
you
hadn't? Absolutely, I repeat.
And do you look and say, "Oh my goodness, I did that last year. What is?
Yes.
When am I going to stop?"
Yes, absolutely. Particularly in my case, it's about allowing emotionally abusive people into my life, and it's just a huge topic. And what the reason it astounds me is because with all my growth, with all my years, and with all my therapy, mm-hmm. that has been a repeated issue for myself. And it always happens in a different guise and in a different form. And so that is my biggest life lesson mm-hmm. to learn, is that, and again, I've been helped along the way there by certain mentors. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman, Patricia Evans, who writes books about it.
So eventually you'll have a letter where you'll see that for a whole year you didn't do it.
Yes. Yeah. I think, I mean, that could be this, that could possibly be this year.
Good. Well, yeah. You'll see.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So does that, I'm interested in that, because I think sometimes the people who seem strong and like they might be protective or helpful are in fact controlling.
Absolutely.
And I think sometimes that may look like it could work for us. It's like,
absolutely.
You know, when you say somebody's just a monster, but aren't you glad he's on your side? Well,
right.
Sure, but is he really?
Right. Exactly.
Does that have to
it
do with it?
So much learning. I mean, in the last case where it happened to me, I had to literally break up with my therapist, mm-hmm. a couple's therapist that we were doing counseling with. It took all the strength I had to listen to the voice in myself that said, "You deserve better than this. This is not right for you."
And did you write that in the letter?
You know, there were many letters. There were many letters that I wrote during that period.
Well, I'm wondering if you include, "You deserve better than this." Do you include in these letters what you deserve?
Yes, and it's funny how it also takes a lot of courage to give yourself such positive affirmations in writing. There's always a little bit of embarrassment that comes in, even when I'm writing to myself and nobody else is going to see
it. Okay, so that's a good topic to talk about for a minute, because even when you're writing a love letter to somebody else, the preparation for it,
mm-hmm.
and we always say, just write down everything. Don't be embarrassed. You're the only one looking at this mm-hmm. piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's just your prep work.
Mm-hmm.
You're the only one looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
So just spill it.
Right.
You don't have to say everything, but at least you'll know how you feel.
Right.
So what's embarrassing about talking to yourself about certain things?
I think, you know, in our culture and even with my own parents, you know, it was just not something you did, was to give yourself out loud positive affirmations.
Oh, because it's like bragging.
Yes, exactly.
Being full of yourself.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But, you know, something just occurred to me. Which is in the subject of not being treated with respect or mm-hmm. kindness, which is that there have been, I tend to write letters about my feelings, and I tend to write letters to people who are causing me grief or with whom I have situations to heal.
I was going to ask you that. Okay.
And I do, and what I want to say is they are not always well received.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very open heart, and the people that I love have open hearts. But when there are people on the periphery of my life, people who are very special people, very talented people, very smart people, have been very good friends, whatever, enough that I've allowed them and welcomed them into my life, but not always affirming or kind. And when I try to work through those relationships by expressing myself, sometimes I get slapped emotionally.
Okay, so which kind of things do you express in those letters to people who... In other words, these are letters where you essentially have to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
You're not
mm-hmm.
part of those. That's a wonderful subset and a really important one of love
yes.
letters. So when you do that, what do you focus on?
Well, in the
their
last,
behavior that was not good?
In the last case that I remember, I wrote it with a very open heart. I had come to realize all the good about this person in terms of his work and his collaboration, but all the how very, very badly he treated me for many, many years as a collaborator. And I realized that even that no matter how... he used to say, oh, look at Rodgers and Hammerstein, look at this one and that one, you know, they're vituperative, they fight. And I realized that for me, my work is not as important as my emotional well-being. So I wrote a letter acknowledging and affirming how brilliant he was and how over the years I had come to have to admit that there was nobody who could replace him, even me, mm-hmm. that I could not write as well as he could, the comedy sketches, and... but that it wasn't worth the abuse, and therefore I would have to be, you know, ending the partnership.
And is that how you said it? But it wasn't. I mean, it sounds like a love letter.
Yeah,
it sounds
yeah,
like
to me it was. If he had had an open heart, you know, I was sincerely upset, and I was giving him more affirmation than I had ever given him about mm-hmm. his work, and even saying you're better than I am at this particular thing that you do.
Now, did he call you or write back?
He wrote back the nastiest note to me.
Oh.
Saying, I'm so sick of the way you know, it was really ugly.
Not your business.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was just a, you know, he just smashed me. And which was more affirmation.
Right, exactly.
Exactly, more affirmation.
Doubly glad that you said
and then
goodbye.
Another one that I wrote to a very close girlfriend who had a habit of teasing and being abusive and would not acknowledge it. And my letter to her was not a goodbye, but a please let's work this out. There's so much that's good about mm-hmm. this friendship,
mm-hmm.
and I am hoping that this is not the end of it, but I'm just asking that you treat me with respect. And she never answered it, and that was the end of the relationship.
How long ago was that?
That was about maybe 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad.
Very sad. And you know something? You don't know that at some later stage in life you will get something from her. I think it's fair to say that sometimes... it can take 10, 15 years mm-hmm. for something to sink in mm-hmm. and for people to see it well. But you're not sending these love letters for what you get in return. You're sending them as a gift.
Mm-hmm. Well,
right?
I mean, the one to the guy, the collaborator, I can't say I was sending it as a gift. I was delineating the truth of that relationship for me.
Well, I'm calling that a gift.
And explaining. I mean, it is a gift.
Yes.
Any kind of truth is a gift.
Your truth
but
put to
many
paper.
Many people don't see it that way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's to get that message in our lives, it's the hardest thing, and it's one that I feel is so important, especially for young women, to get that, you know, that there are ways of being treated. Patricia Evans has lists in her book, The Basic Rights in Every Relationship. It's just brilliant. And the 14 categories of verbal abuse. There are 14 categories of them. It's not just name.
Is there a website that you want to tell us about?
Patricia
for that?
Evans, yes. PatriciaEvans.com. She is
PatriciaEvans.com.
Yes.
Okay.
She has videos of her speaking. She is the most wonderful woman, and her work is absolutely brilliant
is
and
she
life-saving.
Local?
Pardon?
Is she local?
She lives in Walnut Creek.
Okay,
I think that's
local.
That's her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, she gives workshops. She has.
So you've taken what you've learned
mm-hmm.
and not only written letters to yourself, but written letters to others that you need to say, usher out of your life in as pleasant a manner as you can,
mm-hmm.
in as loving a manner as you
mm-hmm.
can.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important. And that's so much nicer than just never picking up the phone again,
mm-hmm.
really, or never calling.
Right.
To empty your heart. In a compassionate
right.
way onto a piece
and
of paper.
And it's also again, a way of self... It's also a loving
yes.
gesture to yourself because
yes.
it's a way of drawing your boundaries and protecting yourself.
Now, do you include this kind of thing in your own letters to yourself?
Hmm.
That you've done this? That congratulations?
Yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I will chronicle. It's been a year since I talked to so-and-so. It's been a year since I, yes. And it's always affirming to know that this time has gone by. And then I, you know, there's always a lot about my family. There's always, one of the hardest things in the letters to myself, the New Year's letter, and the birthday letter, the first thing I always was thankful for was my family. And there was a lot to be desired in my relationships with my family. It was not your typical warm, cozy family, which I guess really doesn't exist.
Right.
Certain people do have
cozier
families.
Than others. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And, but I was always grateful for them, and I never realized what it means to just simply have a parent alive, breathing in the world. No matter what the nature of your relationship, mm-hmm. it's a profound difference when that leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first letter that I had to write in which one of my parents had died was very hard, because mm-hmm. I would always start my letters with, I'm grateful for Mom and Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, I'm grateful for Mom. And now I don't have either one of them. So
but of course that doesn't take away that you're grateful.
Right. That's true.
I mean, those exist on two separate yeah. planes, really.
Right.
So have you... You look at your letter at the end of 6 months mm-hmm. or at the end of a year when mm-hmm. you were doing one, and then you go on to the next one. Have you gone back and looked at a letter from 20 years ago?
You know, I haven't done that lately, but I have, I mean, it keeps taking up more and more space. I have a jam-packed basket full of these letters, and I have been meaning to go back to, like, the very first, I remember writing the very first one. I remember the feeling of it and the situation. And so I haven't done that lately, but yeah.
So you're a person of a noteworthy person artistically. And whatever history means, you know, we like to have, I mean, you see now on television, you know, everybody's biography is gone into, and everybody's on Turner Classic Movies. They talk about people you never thought they'd talk about, really. You know, the actresses of the B-movies of the 40s. Who would have thought that they really would have had such, well, you would think it, but such an important place in filmmaking, for
mm-hmm,
example.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
you're going to have, when all is said and done, and when you're all said and done and we're all gone, you're going to be still a part of San Francisco entertainment history, for sure.
Well, that's a nice thought. I know I'll be part of the Mill Valley history. And
okay,
that
so let's even just say Mill Valley, but things extend.
Yes.
You know, some PhD student in 150 years is going to... Are you taking all those letters and leaving them where they can be found someday? This is your history in your own hand.
Many of them are categorized and, you know, and consolidated. But that's a good reminder that I need to do more of that, for sure.
What will become of them when you're gone?
Well, my only heir is my daughter.
Okay.
And so,
well, that's
knows?
Important.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she knows where to find them?
Not yet. She doesn't. No.
Okay.
No. And she doesn't like any discussion that involves the possibility that I won't live forever.
I understand that. My children are the same way.
Which is very sweet. Yeah.
Yes. It's very sweet. You do worry about, you know, that the good jewelry will end up on the garage sale table.
Yes.
If you don't have a chat with them. But
right. But there is a Marin History Museum. Marin Rocks. It's a new exhibit, and they took the actual scribblings of my Mill Valley song, and they're exhibiting it when
good.
They open.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, is this song now the official song of Mill Valley?
That was done right away.
Okay.
Yeah, Mill Valley City Council meeting shortly after I wrote it, you know, when it came out in 1970. Yeah.
So, you know, in talking to our children who don't want to talk about when we're gone.
Yes.
I can understand that. So there is such a letter maybe to say, you know, I am going to live forever, darling, and I'm going to be the first one ever this has happened to, but I am never going to die. But in case you ever want to know when I'm 600 or 700 years old, what my funny. Life was like, here's where I keep it all.
Yes.
I think that would be so worth doing, because you're putting a lot of work into this history book.
Good point.
Okay.
Good point. I've just gotten as far as my living trust and putting it in a plastic folder and telling her where it is.
Yes.
That's as far as I've gotten.
Well, and why not share the wisdom that we have taken so long to accumulate,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, did I tell you that about the diary that I started writing to my daughter?
No.
Oh, well, this is a really wonderful thing. I know we don't have much time left, but for her last birthday, she was turning 29 in 4 months. And back in April, I thought, what can I give her that's going to be special in her last year of her 20s? So I went to the Ideal Stationery store, and I bought, they have the most deliciously beautiful little books now. I don't know if you've seen them.
Oh,
they,
yes.
Oh, they're fascinating. You know, they have these little magnetic
I know, I have a whole collection.
And they're and exquisite. Designed gorgeously and glittery colors and just beautiful. And I always get lined ones because I can't, I need lines. And so I bought one that was going to be my diary, basically, for my daughter. And I started writing in it. And initially, my intent was to make it Mother's Pearls of Wisdom, of which I thought I had so many. And then it just kind of degenerated into kind of little everyday gossip and thoughts. But it was very...
Where the pearls of wisdom hide.
Right. Yes. Well, maybe. But it was very much affirmative of my daughter. Mm-hmm. And it had a lot of loving thoughts about my daughter and her career and her work and everything. And on her... On her birthday, I mailed it to her. She's in L.A., and then she got it. And she's not a reader. She really, you know, she's not a big reader. But she surprised me by saying, I was riveted, and I read the whole thing right away. I thought
Hooray.
It would take her ages to read it. And she lapped it up, and then she sent it back because I hadn't finished it. And she said, please continue. So now I have this as a regular thing I do. By my bedside, I have two diaries, one for myself and one for my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I find that I tend to write almost all the time in the one to my daughter.
Good.
That most of, I find it's a better, I feel like it's a better use of my time to be writing to her.
Yes.
Than to myself.
And in writing to her, you're of course writing about yourself. You're
yes.
showing yourself. That's great. And
yes.
mailing it to her. I was going to ask you about that. What would it be like if you took that letter you wrote to yourself and instead of putting it aside, you put a stamp on it and mailed it to yourself? Would you try that once just for the heck of it? Because when you see a letter to you with your own handwriting on it,
yes,
it just makes your heart jump.
Yes,
in a different way.
So you're saying instead of just keeping it, sending it out and getting it back,
and then you have a postmark on it.
Yeah,
also, which is
that's a
whole other part of history.
And you that's a very good idea.
She's the stamp that reflects your mood.
Yes, which is so much fun getting stamps.
Okay,
yeah.
And stickers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you're just a treasure
yes,
trove.
Yes, I will do that for sure.
Thank you so much for doing all this with us.
Right, thanks for coming back.
You're
come
so
back
welcome.
Anytime.
It's a delight. It's really a delight.
The whole
to be
world
here.
Of writing letters to yourself and complimenting yourself is not bragging.
No. Right.
I mean, it's bragging if you're lying.
Right.
But if you're telling the truth about yourself, it's just one more form of insight and encouragement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, again, thank you, Rita, for coming,
thank you very
joining
much.
Us. And we thank all of our listeners. We encourage you to join us every week at this time for Love Letters Live. And in the meantime, we encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words and writing them down, stamping them, and mailing them while you still have the chance.
And remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, as you just heard here today, writing a love letter is a special occasion all its own. And if you do it right, well, I shouldn't say that because some are easy, but it can be hard work and a real commitment. Do it.
Okay. So till next time, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye.